Okay, so this is the second lecture on cellular respiration. It's called The Krebs Cycle, A Journey into the Mitochondria. So we have a problem, and the problem is not enough ATP. It turns out that glycolysis, the process that we learned about yesterday, does not yield much ATP. So what is a cell to do? Well, it's going to take that energy-rich molecule, the pyruvate, otherwise known as pyruvic acid, and extract the energy from it. Well, how does it do this? Well, it shuttles the pyruvate into a special organelle in the cell. Remember, organelle means little organ, which is called the mitochondria. Why the mitochondria? Well, it turns out that the mitochondria has a special group of enzymes that can do the job for us. And there's a metabolic pathway inside the mitochondria called the Krebs cycle. And that will extract some of the energy out of pyruvate and help us along our way. And by the way, the Krebs cycle was named after Sir Hans Krebs. Originally, he wasn't Sir, he was just Hans Krebs when he was just a biochemist discovering this cycle. And then, of course, he won the Nobel Prize, and then he was knighted because he's from, you know, England. And so now it's Sir Hans Krebs. Okay, so we need to start off with, on the next slide, on the bridge. So yesterday, when we left off, what we had was we had a molecule of pyruvate, if you remember. Actually, we had two molecules of pyruvate, if you remember from yesterday. And if you remember, a pyruvate is a three-carbon molecule. So you'll see on my illustration the three-carbon molecule, pyruvate, or you remember, it's the same thing as pyruvic acid. And what we need to do is we need to, this particular slide is really not part of the, it's not part of glycolysis, it's not part of the Krebs cycle, it's what I call the bridge, because it bridges the two. And what it does is it allows the pyruvate to be shuttled into the mitochondria and in the process be transformed into a molecule that can be added into the Krebs cycle. And so what you're going to see here is several things. We begin with pyruvate, which is a three-carbon molecule. We end over here on the right with a two-carbon molecule. This two-carbon molecule has a name. It's called acetyl coenzyme A. Everyone repeat that after me. Acetyl coenzyme A. Great. And if you look here, you'll notice something interesting. It only has two carbons. In fact, that two-carbon part of the molecule is the acetyl part. And then you got this other thing stuck onto it, which is the coenzyme A. So that's where you get the name, acetyl coenzyme A. Now, because mass is always conserved, that carbon had to go somewhere, and it turns out that it did. It turns out that the carbon came off as carbon dioxide. And you can see it right there. And with every breath that you exhale, some of that carbon dioxide that you exhale actually came from, this is where it was created, in the bridge. Kind of cool. Maybe you never knew that before. You just learned that. It's kind of neat. Also, you gain a molecule, obviously, if you lose the CO2, in order to have acetyl coenzyme A as your final product in this little part of the reaction, you had to gain a coenzyme A. So you can see that that's part of the reaction. And then the very last thing that happens is that you gain some energy, or probably a better way of putting it is you transfer some energy from the pyruvate into NADH. So the NAD plus comes along and it grabs some energy from that pyruvate and transforms into NADH, which is an energy-rich molecule. You need to know that. NADH is an energy-rich molecule. Okay, so let's kind of do an overview in the next slide. I want to kind of remind you where we are in our drama, the drama I call cellular respiration. Remember, it's a three-act play. And in the first act, which we talked about yesterday, glycolysis, glucose is converted into pyruvate, okay? And remember how that happens. The glucose is how many carbons long? Six. Pyruvate is how many carbons long? Three. So, you know, you can kind of think of a samurai coming up to a glucose molecule with their big sword and just basically cutting it in half. And now you've got, instead of having a one long six-carbon molecule, you've got two three-carbon molecules, which are pyruvate. And so that's act one. And in the process, you make a little bit of ATP. And then what happens is that pyruvate is shuttled into this thing called the mitochondria. And then the pyruvate, in its new form, which is acetyl coenzyme A, and we'll see that in the next slide in more detail, is added into this thing called the Krebs cycle. The Krebs cycle generates a little bit of ATP. And then the very last, that's act two. Act three in our drama is electron transport chain and oxidative phosphorylation. And in that particular reaction, you get lots of ATP. So this is kind of the overview of the drama called cellular respiration. Okay, so right now, I want to go to the next slide, and let's look at the Krebs cycle in detail. Now, before you all, you know, sort of freak out when you look at this and go, oh my gosh, that's way too much to memorize, you're absolutely right, and you don't have to memorize all this. I don't expect you to know the names. I'll expect you to know a few of the names, and you can look at the quiz hints and so forth, and it will tell you specifically what I want you to remember, but it's not a lot. The main things you need to know all the energy that comes off, and you need to know the CO2 that comes off, and you need to know just a couple of these chemicals. Otherwise, don't worry about it. But I want to show you and walk you through it because I think it really helps you, particularly if you're going to go on in biology. If you are going to go on biology, you're going to need to know the Krebs cycle in more detail. But for now, let me just kind of walk you through it. The things I want you to focus in on today in the next few minutes, I want you to focus in on the number of carbons at each step, and then I want you to focus in on the energy that's given off. So let's kind of walk through it. Up at the top, you'll see acetyl coenzyme A. Notice it's a two-carbon molecule. This molecule right below it that's in the Krebs cycle is called oxaloacetate, and it's a four-carbon molecule. Now, one reminder about the Krebs cycle. You'll see in my particular example of the Krebs cycle, all of these molecules end in ATE. Organic chemists, biochemists have several names for the same thing. So you could call this oxaloacetate, or you could call it oxaloacetic acid. All of these are acids, all these molecules. And so you could think of them as acids. So just be aware, some of you, like if you go to maybe, I don't know, if you go to Wikipedia or some internet site, you'll see the same cycle, but they'll all be called acids. It's not another cycle. It's the same cycle. They're just using the other names. So don't get confused by that. Okay. And I don't know, on the AP bio exam, whether they use acid or ATE, I can't remember. So just be aware. Now, if you take a two-carbon molecule and you add it to a four-carbon molecule, do the math. What are you going to end up with? A six-carbon molecule. You guys are amazing. And that six-carbon molecule is over here. It's called citrate or citric acid. Now, because this citric acid is the first, essentially, we consider it like the first molecule in the Krebs cycle. Sometimes the Krebs cycle hasn't been called the Krebs cycle. Guess what it's been called? The citric acid cycle. Once again, if you go to another book or let's say the internet, you may see a reference to the citric acid cycle. It is not another cycle. You know, if you're studying and you come across this, you're like, Mr. Hammock didn't tell us that there was this other cycle inside the mitochondria besides the Krebs cycle, this citric acid cycle. No, no, no. It's the same cycle, okay? Just a different name. Yeah. Well, remember, I already told you two or three slides ago, the pyruvate is converted into acetyl coenzyme A. It's no longer, remember, it's out. Remember, the pyruvate is generated in the cytoplasm, right? Then the pyruvate is brought into the mitochondria in that reaction I call the bridge, and in the process, it's converted into acetyl coenzyme A. So that molecule up top is really what was the pyruvate, okay? And it's a two-carbon molecule. How come it's a two-carbon molecule instead of a three-carbon molecule? Because one CO2 already came off in the bridge, okay? So it's fed into the cycle, citrate is produced, and then you convert it into isocitrate. Notice, when I go through all these different chemicals, they have different names. I'm only telling you how many carbons they have. I'm not telling you like all the bonds to oxygen and hydrogen and all that crazy stuff. You don't need to know that. And you might go to yourself, well, look at citrate and isocitrate. They both have six carbons. Why is this a different molecule? Because I'm not showing you everything that's going on. I'm not drawing out the structure. It's structurally different than this one. Okay, on the next step, you go from isocitrate to alpha-ketoglutarate. Notice that alpha, that's the first letter in the Greek alphabet. And in here, you go from a six-carbon molecule to a five-carbon molecule. So you've lost a carbon. Whenever you lose a carbon, you're losing it in the form of carbon dioxide. And sure enough, there's your carbon dioxide that comes off. Another thing that happens during this particular stage is you take NAD+, and you extract some of the energy from isocitrate, and it gets captured in NADH, okay? So you're taking some of the energy out of these molecules. On the next step, you go from alpha-ketoglutarate, which is a five-carbon molecule, to succinyl coenzyme A, which is a four-carbon molecule. Notice, you've lost another carbon, so you should see a carbon dioxide come off, and sure enough, there it is. You've lost another carbon dioxide. Also, you're extracting some of the energy from alpha-ketoglutarate, and so the NAD+ converts into NADH. There's your energy-rich molecule. Remember, NADH is an energy-rich molecule. Now, this is kind of interesting. For the rest of the cycle, there's no change in number of carbons. Look, four carbon. You don't change that at all. So during the entire one turn of the cycle, you gain two carbons at the beginning, and you lose two carbons along the way. And that's, so there's a balance of carbons. And by the way, those two carbon dioxides that come off, that's the rest of the carbon dioxide that you exhale with every breath. So all the CO2 that you generate with every breath that you exhale comes from the CO2 that's produced in the bridge and these two CO2s that come from the Krebs cycle. That's where the CO2 comes from. So if you never knew that before, you can have an aha moment and think, oh, now I understand where the, as I breathe out, where that CO2 comes from. Kind of cool. Now, back to succinyl coenzyme A. You convert that to succinate, and you capture some of that energy. You convert some of that energy. You convert ADP into ATP, so you get some of that energy. So what we're doing is we're just pulling energy out of these molecules. Then the next step, you take succinate, which is a four-carbon molecule, and you make fumarate, which is another four-carbon molecule. And once again, you pull some more of the energy out of that molecule, and you convert FADH2. And once again, you're pulling some of the energy out. FADH2 is another energy-rich molecule. In the next step, you go from fumarate to malate, no change in carbons, four carbon, and actually no loss of energy either. Finally, the last step, you go from malate to oxaloacetate, four carbon, no loss of carbons. But in this case, you squeeze some more energy out, you pull some more energy out, NAD plus goes to NADH. So if that's one full turn of the cycle, and then you're back to oxaloacetate, okay? So that's the full cycle. What do I want you to remember? Well, mainly the thing I want you to remember is the energy. So let's look at the next slide that sort of summarizes the main ideas. First of all, I want you to remember that acetyl coenzyme A is a two-carbon molecule. It's produced in the bridge, which we talked about at the beginning of this lecture, and it's fed into the Krebs cycle by reacting with oxaloacetate, which is a four-carbon molecule, producing citrate, a six-carbon molecule. Those, I want you to remember those three molecules because they're the key molecules that start the whole thing off. Then, each time a carbon is removed from one of the molecules in the cycle, a carbon dioxide is produced. So remember, this happens at two different steps, reducing the original six-carbon molecule into a four-carbon molecule. And in the process of this one turn of the cycle, one ATP is produced, three NADHs are produced, and they're produced at three different steps of the cycle. One FADH2 is produced, and that's it. That's where all your energy is in one turn of the cycle. Now, what you got to think about is this. I want you all to think about this. We started with one glucose, right? How long is the glucose? How many carbons? Six. We chopped it in half. We got two pyruvates. What we've just described is if you feed one pyruvate in the mitochondria, this and you get one turn of the Krebs cycle, this is what you get. One ATP, three NADHs, one FADH2. But is that all the energy? What do you need to do? You need to send that other pyruvate through. So really, the total energy that's extracted, you have to do two turns of the Krebs cycle. You have to double all this. Does that make sense to everybody? Good, yeah. I don't know. That's a great question. Yeah. There's hydrogen available. Don't worry about where the hydrogen comes from. It's just there, in the cell. That's not important. Yeah, one of the things you can really get hung up on is all the, technical biochemistry. We're not going to get into that because this is not a biochem class. Okay, yeah. This happens in every cell of all living things, okay, that end up using oxygen. Okay, if you're anaerobic, if you don't use oxygen, you don't do this. But if you're an aerobic organism, every cell does this because every cell runs on ATP. That's the energy source of the cell, okay? So let's do a summary. So my next slide is a summary at the end of the Krebs cycle. So let's make sure we understand. So first of all, in this little chart I've made, in glycolysis, you get two ATP, if you remember that from yesterday. And you also get two NADHs. So at the end of glycolysis, that's what you get. At the end of the bridge, you get two NADHs because you have to go through the bridge twice, right? And then at the end of the Krebs cycle, you get two ATP, six NADHs, two FADH2s because you have to do the Krebs cycle twice. And then if you add everything up, so this is the total energy count at the end of the Krebs cycle. You got four ATPs, 10 NADHs, 2FADH2. You need to know these. This is really important. You'll get this stuff on the test. Okay, the AP Bio, the College Board exam, I may ask questions about this too. So, but there's still a problem. What's the problem? Anybody have an idea? Yeah. Right. It's most of the energy from the original glucose has not been converted into ATP. So we've got a problem. It's in a form the energy the cell can't really use easily, NADH or FADH2. Okay, so we still have a problem. So one more process is required, and that is electron transport chain and oxidative phosphorylation. That's, remember, Act 3 of our three-part drama. And so that's what we're going to talk about tomorrow. Because this process will convert all the NADH and FADH2 into ATP. Does that make sense to you guys? Okay. Now, the one last thing I want to talk about before we conclude this lecture is, where does all this stuff go on? This last slide you are going to be tested on. You will need to reproduce this picture. You will need to label and describe what goes on at all these different places. So I want to do a quick review with you. You're looking at the mitochondria. Let's see if we can remember. Let's go back to earlier in the course. Where did the mitochondria originally come from? Who wants to tell me where the mitochondria originally came from? Yeah. Not a protist, but you got the, you're on to something. Yeah. It was a prokaryote, right? Now, how do we know that the mitochondria was a prokaryote? What evidence is there for that? Give me one piece of it. It's got circular DNA. Why is that important? Or why is that evidence? Can someone help? Yeah. That's right. If you look at any bacteria, you look at their DNA, and it's circular DNA. So mitochondria has circular DNA, bacteria have circular DNA. That looks pretty interesting. What else? Yes, they're about the same size as one another. So bacteria and mitochondria are about the same size. Those are the two biggies. Now, there's a name that we have for this process. There's a theory that explains this. What's the name of that theory? Do you guys remember the name of the theory? Anybody remember? The theory of how the mitochondria invaded a eukaryote? Yeah. Very good. Endosymbiosis. Now, this happened more than once in the evolution of life. So we put a word on the front of that endosymbiosis. What's that? Serial. Serial endosymbiosis. So that's, there you go. Very good, you guys. So now let's take a look at the mitochondria. Look at the mitochondria. Tell me, what do you notice that's unusual about the mitochondria? What's really amazing about the mitochondria? Take a look at it. What's different about it than most cells? Yeah. Yes, very good. It has an inner and an outer membrane. And is that a coincidence? Do you remember I've been saying something again and again? Structure leads to function. So you should look at the structure and say, the fact that there's two membranes, that's a structure. It probably leads to the function. We're going to talk about how this works tomorrow, like why. But right now, I just want to label a few things for you. First of all, the mitochondria has an outer membrane, which is permeable to most things, okay? The inner membrane, which is sort of convoluted like this, it's, you know, wavy and so forth, that increases the surface area of that inner membrane, which is important. We'll see why tomorrow. But that inner membrane is also called the Christie, and it's permeable to only a few things, like pyruvate or ATP. You'll see why tomorrow. A few more names. Inside the most inner part of the mitochondria, inside the inner membrane, that is called the mitochondrial matrix. That's the matrix, okay? And sometimes it's called the inner compartment. The area between the inner membrane and the outer membrane is called the, intermembrane space. How convenient. Or the outer compartment. Now, a couple more things you need to know. The Krebs cycle, the cycle we just described, completely occurs inside the matrix, okay? So it occurs inside the mitochondrial matrix in there. Glycolysis, which we talked about before, occurs out in the cytoplasm, okay? And finally, Act 3, which we're going to talk about tomorrow, electron transport chain and oxidative phosphorylation, it occurs, actually, it's kind of cool, in the wall of the inner membrane. The enzymes that make this happen are embedded in the wall of the inner membrane, and there's a reason for that, but I'm not going to give it to you until tomorrow. I want you to just sort of think about that tonight. What could this be about? Why? Okay? So think about that, and we will pick that up tomorrow.